That's out.
Oh, he's dropped it. I don't believe it. That's unbelievable. He was throwing it up. He thought he had it. It was a little lollipop. And the man who did so well with the bat has taken his eye off the ball, and the ball has just dribbled out of his fingers. He was about to throw it up.
Hey, great cricket.
The Great Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a great cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the great cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grey Cricketer Podcast. On today's show, Pakistan beat Afghanistan in a thriller as Gulbadan double pythons his way into cricket shithousery. Australia wins again, beating their friends across the ditch at Lord's. Australia may never lose again, but what does this all mean? Hashtag AskTDC begins with Bairstow's comments and ends on the bench press. My name is Ian Higgins and I'm joined by Sam Perry in Melbourne. And Pez, Pakistan's win overnight puts England on the absolute brink.
Morning, Higgos. Another show from us here, and we should say to the listeners out there that this one's going to die in the ass pretty quickly because we're recording again tonight with a very special guest, George Bailey. We have to put something out tomorrow morning, Australia time, after the epic match that is England versus India that could have major implications, particularly for England. Is that funny? I haven't decided yet. Because I feel like the entire theme as someone covering the World Cup is, you know, do you be neutral or do you just let the Australian sporting exceptionalism wave just wash over you? And if it's the latter, then yeah, it's funny if they get knocked out. But one of the flip sides of that is it could really, be to the detriment of the entire game in that country. We're friends with jobs there. Not that that's the reason, you know, you keep cricket going. Anyway, I digress. We understand that Pakistan-Afghanistan is the game of the day, but we're unapologetically on the side of Australian sporting exceptionalism. So let's talk about Pakistan somewhere near the end. Australia has won, he goes. They were 92 for 5 in the shit. Trent Bolt, who, by the way, looks extremely lean.
Yeah.
You can maybe talk us through
Languid.
That. Yeah. He's just has a very, very low body fat percentage, Trent Bolt. Like, he looks
has
like
he got
he could
less facial body hair. Has he regressed in age? Is he Benjamin Buttoning his way in this World Cup?
But you shrink when questions. You get older, don't you? He just looks so, like, thin. Like, he looks like he could really bust out a half marathon. Like, if you're doing a half marathon fun run,
yeah,
he'd be the guy, like, running on the second lap or something, running past you just at a speed that you couldn't sprint at. Anyway, yeah. Trent Bolt took Pfeiffer, and he took one of those hat-tricks that don't count, he goes.
Yeah.
So anyway, but guess what? That man whose head everyone's been calling for, Usman Khawaja, came in and played the insurance innings that I plumped for in the last show, mate. So Australia's in the shit. That's why Khawaja's there.
Yep.
And he anchored his way through the innings, ably supported by Alex Carey, who again was classy with 71 from 72 deliveries. I think the Australian team hit 12 boundaries in the innings. Carey hit 11 separate to that. What a batter, he goes. I mean, the way his temperament, his class, the way he can go through the gears, the way he can sum up a situation, the way he can dig you out of a hole but also accelerate you, the way he bats in England in a series and a summer, he goes, when Australia needs batters, even into the Test cricket. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, well, Carey as well. mate, I'm just looking, I'm looking at the scorecard here, just reflecting on the night that's been. You know, I mean, Khawaja 88, but if 129 balls, I mean, is that quick enough? You know, I'm not quite sure, batting at three. Pez, you're nailing the head there, mate, because we spoke last podcast, or one of the podcasts we've done recently, and you said, you know, Khawaja's in there when Warner and Finch don't put on 120, which is bound to happen eventually. Khawaja comes in and he's basically your third opener, and what an innings he's played. He's locked in for the next 5 years of cricket in ODI cricket. Isn't it interesting, mate? Like, I mean, how like the narrative can change because, Australia's been in massive trouble in batting in the first innings at the, in this World Cup, once against New Zealand, once against West Indies, when they've been five down for less than 100 runs, and both times they've won those games. And at the beginning of the tournament, my take on that was, well, we got away with one there, we're underdone. But now it's happened against New Zealand, who are admittedly a much better team with a much better bowling attack. It's now like, well, that's what good teams do. They get themselves out of bad situations. And that's, ironically, what England have not done in this World Cup so far, losing to Sri Lanka, which, given that South Africa beat them two nights ago by nine wickets, shows you how strong a team Sri Lanka are. But, I mean, the whole narrative of this, when we've seen from my perspective now, is that Australia are getting better in this World Cup. Yep. I mean, not only did Australia find themselves 5 for 100, but also New Zealand found themselves 2 for 100, chasing a relatively low score. Sure, the run rate was there or thereabouts, maybe a little bit slow. I think they're going just over 4. So, but Kane Williams to the crease, then Stark comes in and just fucking just gets him out again. I mean, is this the greatest cricket team of all time?
I mean, this is the thing, Higos. Well, firstly, let me say, just to that question, talking to a friend yesterday, your life freezes in your childhood. You know, whatever sport you see in your childhood is the sport that kind of informs your identity and your relationship to it. I've always thought that, and we were just lucky through the 90s.
And that's why Space Jam 2 isn't going to work.
Exactly, and that's why England cricket being monsters isn't going to work either. Now, that aside... so it's really difficult to now he goes, we're sort of 33, aren't we?
Yes.
I don't know how old you are, 32, 33.
Yeah.
It's difficult because for the first time in sport, we're older than most of the players, so you have a different relationship to it.
That's so true, yeah.
It's a really long way of saying that if Australia do win this tournament, it will go down, it would have to go down as one of the great performances from an Australian cricket team. Still a long way to go.
Uh-huh.
Right, still a long way to go. So we've got to overcome India. where I was going with that. So that's where this would be placed in terms of Australian cricket. In terms of the bowling today, he goes, they are growing into the tournament. So England's weather, I'm a bit all over the place here because it is
It's
40 in the morning, but
England's
weather has kind of brought Australia back into this tournament.
Ironically.
Like, it's created wickets that have asked for different skills from different players. Like, so what we've learned is that even though Australia's suffering from climate change, and really that should be baking the wickets in a manner that, you know, creates drier wickets, flatter wickets, and Australia should succeed, Australia suck at flat wicket cricket, you know? But when the wickets are offering a little bit, or they're a bit slower, Australia playing great. And then, so in this bowling performance, Stark has taken Williamson's wicket with a change down off cutter. When was the last time you saw Stark get a wicket like that? I mean, Stark gets wickets from Yorkers and balls that just have incredible wheels at guys' heads where they pop it up in the air or just smashes the stumps everywhere. Now he's getting Kane Williamson with, like, well thought out, change down off cutters that get the edge. Australia really are growing into the tournament. Mate, at one point in this inning, Aaron Finch bowled Glenn Maxwell, then Steve Smith, and then Aaron Finch, and then Nathan Lyon, just four spinners, some part-timers, some leading spinners, all in a row. Steve Smith was bowling off spin at one point. Australia are tactically flexible now. Steve Smith came on bowling to Colin de Granholm. De Grondom? I've never said it out loud.
Yeah.
First ball. De Grondom's first ball. It was a leggy from Smith. Well pitched, well flighted. And de Granholm just put it down Khawaja's throat at long off. Leggy. And then Jimmy Neesham comes into bat. Fresh from 97 not out. Smith just bowls five off spinners from around the wicket. All perfectly pitched. Neesham's like, what the fuck's going on? And he just conceded one run from the over and took a wicket. What's going on?
Okay, well, a lot going on here, Pez. First of all, Australia are going to win the third grade World Cup. That's what this wicket was. Didn't think that wicket, like, who was it? When Latham was caught by Steve Smith at mid-wicket. Absolute screamer. You got to see it. I mean, people who listen to this are going to see the highlights. Absolute screamer. But just that image reminded me so much of a fucking third grade game. Not the catch itself or the ball being bowled, but it was like fading light, summer's afternoon, dusty wicket. And it's just, and it like bowling stump to stump, ring fields, and then Steve Smith taking a catch on an Astro pitch next to the square. It just had everything about it. It was third grade. Then I'm looking at like, that was a slow wicket. Stark nicking off Kane Williamson with off change, you know, just change of pace, just rolling his fingers down the seam. You know, Stoinis bowling stump to stump, ring fields. I mean, it's brilliant. I mean, this is why Australia are going to win the World Cup now that I've decided, because, and I have come full circle, and it's because that we've grown up playing grade cricket on shit wickets. I mean, none of these guys have played lower grade cricket. Let's be right about that. But I mean, this is what we've all been dreaming of, like a World Cup where, you know, your best batsman can bowl some leg spin. Then like, Steve, do you mind just maybe just twisting the fingers the other way? Maybe some offies, left-hander? Yeah, go on then. I'll just do that and be amazing at it. Fuck. Oh, my. I mean, yeah, we're going to do it. Well, I mean, first of all, Australia's going to finish top or second. That's so we're going to finish first or second in the World Cup. I think that in itself is I maintain that if Australia make the World Cup final, that's a brilliant World Cup for Australia, and it should always be that. Even if they were favourites, it's a good World Cup. But this team, who are just getting stronger and stronger, now you've got depth everywhere. Now you've got insurance at three and Khawaja. Yeah. You've got Carey actually might be the most informed batter that Australia have. I mean, we haven't seen a lot because it hasn't been used. Because you
mentioned him digging us out of the hole against West Indies and now New Zealand, but he also hit 50-odd against India as well when we were in the shit.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, he's been really impressive, mate. Sorry to interrupt there. We're into preferred semi-final chat.
Oh, mate.
Are we not? I mean,
yeah.
Can we have New Zealand?
Yeah.
I mean, I say it with the kind of arrogance that Langer and Ponting have allowed us to have.
Mm-hmm.
Ponting's Drake on the balcony. Where is that? And I saw that New Zealand had Craig McMillan on the balcony. Didn't have quite the same effect.
They needed either Jacinta Ardern or
yes, good point.
An image, like a Tupac-esque image of Jonah Lomu. Yes, correct. You saw where I was going with that. Exactly the same way. That would be the only thing.
That's not bad that for would New Zealand. Can we get Jacinta Ardern up there and a hologram of Jonah Lomu? That would frighten me, frankly.
Do you remember his thighs in that World Cup in England, which is also in England, actually?
He's in the – I don't know what sport it is, but he's in the all-time greatest sports team.
Definitely.
That I've seen.
What a player.
Someone sent us a rugby 15 the other day of cricket players. Ponting was like playing 10 and Tendulkar was at 9 or something. It was weird but strangely on the money.
Yeah, okay. Anyway. I'm not sure I'd have Ponting. Anyway, Pez, you're right. In terms of preferred finals, you're absolutely right. It's going to get complicated again when I start talking about the fixtures and stuff because, I mean, tonight's game is absolutely enormous, India and England. But essentially, England, if they win both their games, will finish third.
Third.
Because they play against New Zealand, who will then finish fourth. Yep. So, but if England lose tonight, the best they can do is finish fourth, and India will probably finish first. Therefore, Australia will finish second, 2 place 3, 1 place 4.
Yep.
So therefore, that's the way you're looking. It's incredible. I think maybe now's a good time to talk about Pakistan and Afghanistan, which was a weird game for all sorts of reasons. Pakistan roll on, I suppose. Will McPherson, who we're speaking to in a moment's time, put it very well. So they won with 2 balls to spare somehow, and that means that actually as we speak, Pakistan are currently fourth, and they have played one game more than England. They play against Bangladesh, and it's just a straight scenario of if England lose tonight, Pakistan beat Bangladesh, England are out of the World Cup. Pakistan will finish fourth. That would actually mean an Australian-New Zealand semi-final and an England-India semi-final. Fuck, that'd be pretty good.
Or a Pakistan-India semi-final too.
Yes, that's what I meant to say.
Yeah, there are still permutations. I mean, if England win tonight, New Zealand could be brought into this as well. So
yeah, that's true.
If India win tonight, New Zealand are guaranteed a semi. If England win tonight, New Zealand is still in a bit of trouble.
Yeah. It would come down to net run rate.
That's right.
And
which we all know about fairly well, so we don't really need to cover it.
Yeah, don't even cover it. Yeah, because everyone's right across the numbers. But yeah, basically New Zealand have a better net run. Mate, so this Pakistan game, look, we don't need to go into the nitty-gritty of it, but it basically comes down to the final over. Yes. Who bowls it? And the scenario surrounding why he bowls it.
Yeah, it was Gulbuddin.
Yeah.
Is Afghanistan's captain.
Yes.
And
he also opens the batting and sometimes bowling. And he does double Python bicep flexes and he gets a wicket. Let's be right about Gulbuddin. Yeah.
And in the lead, about. In the lead into this final over where hitherto Afghanistan have been pretty much ahead.
Yep.
All game, but then it started conceding a lot of runs.
Yeah.
And one of those was with four overs to go, I believe, four or five overs to go, Gulbuddin conceded 18.
Yeah, yeah.
Rashid Khan bowled the next over, it went for 10. Gulbuddin took himself off.
Yep,
smart. And that over conceded 2.
Yep.
So you think pretty good over?
Yep, good over. Good decision, good captaining.
Rashid Khan came back on, conceded 10 again.
Mm.
And so who was to bowl final over? Well, of course, the guy who conceded 18, Gulbuddin. Captain.
I'll sort of that, lads.
Yeah.
That was just a blip.
The double python captain worked as a batting as well. And I think it went sort of two or one and then two. And then there was a wide that was meant to be a wide, but the guy got bat on it. It was just absolute mayhem. And then the next one went for two when there should have been a run out, but Gulbuddin fumbled the ball and they got buzzers. And then it was a, you know. One smashed the bisected extra cover or cover and extra cover for 4, and that was it. So pretty, yeah, I mean, the theme, you know, well, this is the great cricketer, so overnight it's been third grade.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Well, it means that Pakistan are just weird as ever because they've, you know, just completely done England. They've had a couple of massive results in this World Cup after being smashed before the tournament started 4-0 in England. Then they've just scraped past Afghanistan, who are yet to win a game. I mean, so, I guess from one point, you know, it's disappointing if, you know, Afghanistan finished the tournament on 0 wins. I guess that's not a good look or a good thing for anyone. It'd be great if Afghanistan could win a game. Just for them, just to add some colour as well to the World Cup. Probably doesn't look like it's going to happen, but like, it's funny because if Pakistan were out of contention for this World Cup, the whole World Cup would have been rooting for Afghanistan, their final over. But because of the permutations of a Pakistan win, therefore leapfrogging England with a game to play, two games to play, it's like, nah, we kind of would like Pakistan to win this one. And Afghanistan played their part. And, yep, Captain Gulbuddin he has no one to answer to. He can just completely David Brent the situation and just say, you know, you blokes let me down. I don't know why Rashid Khan, you know, went for 10 twice. It's all there, mate. I mean, we're going to be speaking about this again as we move on through the week, but it might be a time to get Will McPherson on the phone in the UK. He's in a pub in the UK again, so let's get his thoughts on the line.
All right. Here goes. We're talking to our great friend from the London Evening Standard. He's a cricket and rugby correspondent there. He's at the Doghouse in Kennington, where he joined us last time, before he'll go to Edgbaston tomorrow for an incredibly important match for his country, for England. They're taking on India. Will McPherson, welcome to the Great Cricketer.
Thank you for having me again, guys. I mean, I feel like I should, every time I feature on this podcast now, I should wander the sort of 600 metres from my flat to this pub, because it seems like you just have this great habit of catching me when I'm here, which makes it appear like I spend all my time here, when actually I only spend about 40% of my time in the pub. But yeah, it's great to be here.
Well, in the interest of transparency, you did say, you know, in the professional spirit, can we please call now and not in an hour's time, because you might be a few more pints deep. Is that because you're sort of gearing up for, you know, the fear that tomorrow might bring? There's some pretty catastrophic permutations if England don't win.
Yeah, I think England fans, England team, England media, everyone are in a position which we didn't quite imagine England would end up in. That's not to say it's not brilliantly exciting, and I'm absolutely buzzing for tomorrow. We're playing India at Edgbaston, which is, it's hard to explain how much this is the perfect venue for it, for this game. England love playing Edgbaston. They've lost, I think, in all formats, they've won their last 9 games there. It absolutely buzzes when England play there. And yet, Birmingham is a city with a huge South Asian population. And I think 55% of ticket buyers are Indian, or have said when they bought, they had to tick a box when they bought their ticket saying who they were barracking for. And I think 55%, I'm told, are ticks for India and 45% for England. So the atmosphere is going to be off the hook. The South Asian fans of this tournament have been the reason all of the grounds have been absolutely buzzing. I mean, I was only listening to Pakistan, Afghanistan on the radio and a bit on the TV today, but Headingley made like weird noises because of the Pakistan fans. It's absolutely incredible. And I expect tomorrow to be no different. And, you know, England are going into an ODI tomorrow, not as favourites for the first time in a couple of years, like particularly at home. You know, they've been so dominant. They've been so excellent. They've got this. It's reared its head in the last 10 days or so. But this reputation, they're flat track bullies. Whether or not they are, they've won so many games. It doesn't really matter. They just kept going on and on and on. And then now tomorrow, India are the favourites. So it's a weird position for England to be in. And they've really got, you know, that Pakistan win over Afghanistan was really tense today. And actually had far more consequences for England than Afghanistan, that defeat, really, because they're obviously out. Well, obviously, it would have been amazing for them to get that win in this tournament, but it matters more for England. If Afghanistan had managed to defend that score, then England would have only needed to win one of these two games. As it is, they probably need to win both of them. So yeah, it's shaping up to be an absolute beauty, Edgbaston tomorrow.
Well, there's been so much written about, you know, the cricket in the UK being behind the paywall, and now England's find themselves essentially on the brink of elimination before tomorrow night, which will be the biggest game of the World Cup so far. I mean, can you put into words like how important it is for every single facet of English cricket from the ground up, for England to succeed, to therefore grow the game? Because at the moment, you know, while it's not on free-to-air television, you know, no one's actually watching these games. So it sort of needs an English victory parade of the World Cup in a home World Cup to actually expand the game. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the English cricket and free-to-air TV is about as complex a debate as you can get into. Yeah. And it can be incredibly boring. And Sky have propped the game up in this country financially for 15 years. They've done many brilliant things, and yet I think that there's going to be a sort of lost generation of kids now who sort of don't really know that much about it. And so the ECB next year, their idea for fixing the game and giving it more exposure across the country is this competition of 100, which they've invented an ingenious new format. And I say ingenious in the you know, as loosely as I can.
Yeah.
But they've invented this format. But that was all kind of based on the idea that they have this brilliant crop of players who are all sort of in their prime. You know, that sort of 27 to 31 sweet spot where they're all excellent. And, oh, look, there's a home World Cup and a home Ashes in the same summer just before we launch this. And you never know. If the cards fall right, we might have a World Cup winning team for the first time. And actually, it's looking like got a team that might not even make it out of the groups. So that grand ambition. Do you see what I mean? That grand ambition to grow the game. And it's all very noble. They're making up for their own mistakes, but it's all very noble. That is it's a bit stillborn if you don't have the momentum from this summer of a lot of people talking about cricket making the front pages and being cutting through a little bit. If you don't have that, then next summer is quite hard to, it's even harder to get going. So yeah, it is massively important. Even if England don't win the thing, it is it's hugely important they get out of a groove to a home World Cup, because they haven't, England haven't got to the semi-finals of the World Cup since 92. So, you know, it, no one really, very few people know what it really feels like here. So, tomorrow's massive. It's vast. And if they lose tomorrow, then they're, as I said, it's a wing and a prayer that they beat New Zealand and then results go their way. And frankly, Pakistan are on a roll, on a very sort of Pakistani roll, but they suddenly look like they could be contenders, even though they nearly lost to Afghanistan today, very nearly, and yet we're still, everyone's bricking it about Pakistan. So yeah, England and Pakistan are playing absolutely to type, aren't they? I mean, it's unbelievable, really, given the way England beat them 4-0 in a series just before this World Cup. It is unfathomable, really. But, you know, England are going to England, as we might say here.
What about Best, though? Will, I mean, he's taken aim at you guys. You've obviously all got together at the pub. And so who's going to take the first hit at him?
Who's going to headbutt him?
I mean, I was in the room for his outburst, which is sort of how it's come across since. And it was all, it's a bit of a funny situation. It was all said with a smile and a joke and a laugh. It was all said with smiles, but it was, the comments were sort of pretty wrong-headed, basically. He's just wrong. But what I've just told you then is that everyone here wants England to win, whether you're in the media or in the stands. Like, people need it to happen. Well, not necessarily win the whole thing, but get through this game at least, or these two games. But also, this is Johnny Bairstow, and he has used perceived criticism that he's sort of felt he's received before as excellent motivation. So I don't know whether that's what he's doing this week, where he's just trying to sort of wind himself up. It was a brilliant one in November when England were in Sri Lanka, and he got injured and then didn't quite immediately get back in the test side, and then scored 100 when, as soon as he did, batting in a new position at number three. And then sort of he'd sort of made up all this criticism he was receiving and gave this sort of really pointed celebration towards the press box when he got his 100. Basically, tomorrow, Johnny Bairstow playing at Edgbaston for England against India, he's 100% in binary mode, which is golden duck or double 100. There will be nothing, I'm absolutely certain there will be nothing in between. So we'll see how he goes.
Just finally, Will, there's been a bit of talk about flat track bullies and people kind of trying to wind back that idea that England can only win with flat wickets, but flat wickets do help. I mean, I know that the ICC is notionally in charge of the tournament, but God, you'd just love a flat one, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, all the talk is that it's straw-coloured and looks flat and looks great for England tomorrow. I mean, we'll see when we get to Edgbaston, when we actually peel them off in the morning. Roy's back, which is far more important than what the pitch looks like. He and Bairstow are sort of, the team is built around the good starts that they have given them for years. And basically, this World Cup, that has stopped happening. Because firstly, they each fell cheaply, and then Roy got injured, and so the quality of England's sort of top order output has been way down. Just on the thing about the tracks, I mean, early June was like as wet as I can remember here. I know you lads over there think that it just rains constantly here, but it was unbelievable. It was so unfortunate for groundsmen and all that. I'm sure they would have wanted these pitches to be flatter and more high scoring, and all the talk about 500 before World Cup. I reckon if the groundsmen had their way, it would have actually looked like that. But they didn't. They had their preparations severely dented, and they couldn't sort of properly get pitches that they wanted ready. And in the end, it's been brilliant for the tournament, because it's been a great leveller. You've turned up at each game not really sure what's going to happen. With, you know, they peeled back the covers and we've had pitches like we've never seen at Headingley or the Oval or Trent Bridge before or whatever. England have still scored 380 plus twice. Australia have scored 380. Like, that's fine, but there's also been all these like bum squeaking 200 odd games, which have been brilliant as well. So actually, it's probably a really good thing that the pitches haven't quite ended up how they imagined they would. But that said, I think everyone who's become familiar with England's ODI team over the last 4 years would really, really like it to be a really, really flat pitch tomorrow. but we'll see.
Nice one. I will let you get back to your pints, Will, if you're not just holding one in your hand at the moment. Will McPherson, London Evening Standard, thanks for joining us.
No problem, lads. See you soon.
Hashtag AskCGC, Pez. Here we go. We've got a few questions lined up here. Obviously, before we get into that, obviously, greatcricketer.club is where all the tickets are available for our live shows. I believe Sydney is sold out, so no more Sydney tickets. Is that confirmed, Pez? Am I right in thinking that? Sydney is sold out?
Check.
You can check.
On a Hello Sport podcast. Do your own research.
Do your own research.
But it's... If it's not sold out, it's very close to sold out. So have a look.
Okay. With Melbourne, I believe there were 40 tickets left, and that was on Friday. So there's going to be less than 40 tickets remaining for the Melbourne show. So recommendation, getting quick. Brad Hodge and Steve O'Keefe are your Sydney and Melbourne guests. And then obviously we're heading to the UK. Tickets are going very quickly there as well, particularly Birmingham and London. The second London show sold out. Leeds and Manchester, we need you to get behind the boys. As I understand it, greatcricketer.club for all your tickets, etc., etc. Jesse writes in and says, "G'day guys, big fan, love your work. A bit of an ask, TGC here. In a recent Facebook post, I saw a video of Dave Warner being shown to be using headphones while he trains, and more astonishingly, while he bats. Is this an alpha move, or is it fucking rare? Hypothetically, if blokes in the lower grades started doing this, do you think it would give incentive for higher graders? High-grade bowlers to change nets and bowl bumpers at them to assert their dominance? Or would it perhaps encourage the weaker in the closet rare units to maybe do the same? Could this ever happen pre-Trump? What is fucking happening to cricket?" Good question, Jesse. I'm always thinking that.
Jesse has picked up on the like increasing confluence of alphadom and rare unit.
Yes.
If that's even a term, well, it's not. That's happening in cricket. It's probably a broader, like, sort of a broader function of the Trump era that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
It's really difficult to know what's alpha and what's rare these days. Like back in the late 90s, early 2000s, really simple equations on this kind of stuff. But yeah, and with Warnie, you're kind of tempted to say, well, everything's an alpha move, but you could similarly say everything's a fucking rare move too.
Mm.
Like there was a moment in the game today against New Zealand where Santner, in one of the rare swipes for a big shot that New Zealand played, actually went for six off Nathan Lyon. And it went to the stands, and Warner went to fetch it. And it was kind of only sort of one or two rows back. And as they couldn't actually find the ball, it was on the ground somewhere. And I think he was about 5 metres to the left of it. And while that was happening, the camera was trained on him, and people were talking to him, being nice to him. And he actually arranged to take some chips from some crisps, as I would say, in the UK, nice. From a Kiwi supporter who was really happy with it as well.
Yeah.
And he was just chatting with everyone. I thought, eating crisps, while he's like playing cricket. It's obviously part of a PR move.
Yeah, obviously.
Directed by Roxy Jacenko. But was that alpha or was that rare? Hard to say. So I don't actually know the answer in terms of wearing headphones. I do know, I tried to do that once, training. Not at Did training, you? Just by myself, wearing earphones while I was bowling. And I felt like all of the audio cues that you get from bowling, even like your feet hitting the ground and stuff, help you.
Yeah.
I was bowling heaps of full tosses, but maybe I'm just shit.
Well, I mean, hearing is actually significantly important for balance. So there's that as well. But I remember in the UK hearing about a guy who was wicketkeeping in the second 11, and he was wicketkeeping with an iPod playing. And yeah, the captain of the team went absolutely ballistic at him. So, but I mean, that is weird. We're keeping with a fucking just an iPod playing.
Maybe this is the kind of lateral thinking we need to keep people involved in cricket.
Maybe
because Lord knows that like one of the things that drove me out of the game was just being sick of the conversations because I'd heard them, you know. Like, I mean, cricket is one fucking record anyway. You know, you press play at the start of the day and you hear the same shit or some version of it. So maybe they need to find what, you know, if you could tell me that I could get through, say, you know, a couple of Joe Rogan podcasts, for example. Maybe not Joe Rogan. There's a really good Sammy Shah podcast, actually, about free speech.
Oh, yeah.
Done by the ABC. But, you know, if I could just put on that those episodes during the middle overs of a one dayer,
yep,
I'd be much more interested in playing cricket.
That's true. Maybe this is the influence of the NBA. You know how you see like them warming up and they're all wearing Beats by Dre. I mean, what's the influence? Like, how much a Beats going to take over world sport that like people are just playing, or they're just all Bluetoothed up through Beats by Dre and they're all communicating to each other? You know,
feel free to reach out, Beats.
Feel free to reach out. Exactly. You know, if you're the wicketkeeper and you want to talk to, you know, mid off, but you can do it via Bluetooth. I mean, we could be revolutionising the game. That would keep people in cricket because you could sledge your teammates from afar while whispering into an earpiece. Yep, I've done it. I've said the most ridiculous thing possible. Ned writes in. He says, I recently became an uncle. Congratulations, Ned. And there's no doubt I'll try to live my cricketing career vicariously through her. As a 21-year-old with the knees and ankles of an 83-year-old, Little Autumn is my only hope. I found myself rubbing her temples and whispering the names of Elise Perry, Meg Lanning and Belinda Clark, attempting to aspire and brainwash her into a life of Saturday afternoon misery. Unfortunately, an auntie on the other side of the family, who is English, happened to overhear what I said. Subsequently, she told me to wait a minute, then running outside to the shed and return with a sheet of coarse 80 grit sandpaper. She then put my niece's hands to it and said, good girl, learning to cheat early. My question is, where do I hide the body? Warm regards, Ned.
Yeah, good escalation. I've learned a bit about sandpaper. Like, a lot of people just adding those nice little elements of detail. 80 grit sandpaper.
Yes.
Over the time. Yeah. No, I mean, I don't really have much to add to that one. He goes, I think it's a fair response to what his grandmother's done. He wants his niece to be good at cricket.
Yep.
She comes back and says, you'll learn to cheat.
Yep.
And he says, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah. Yeah, not a whole lot we can add to that.
Okay. George Atkin, can I just read this one? He goes,
of course, mate.
Dear TGC, while I'm conscious that I've asked you a fairly shit question before from one of your Australian live shows, guess which shit question was mine? Fuck me, I bet you copped a lot of them. They're all in parentheses. I do feel like I'm encountering a phenomenon that many culturally bereft Australian millennials are coming to terms with at the moment. While I've never graced the wastelands of a grade cricket oval, sorry, my son's just knocking at the door now, at least he's not crying, I do have an innate and totally unjustified love for the game that fills the joyless, lonely time that most people refer to as summer. As a result, I've found myself asking my girlfriends to come home early on a Friday evening out with friends. She believes it to be an extremely mature move to moderate our disposable income expenditure and hopefully overcome the ironclad grasp of the baby boomers on their negatively geared investment properties. Well said. However, I do not have the heart to tell her that the real reason is that I could not possibly miss the Sri Lanka versus South Africa derby, two countries I have absolutely no connection to at this crucial point in this tournament, when every single match is basically as important as the Ashes themselves. Will Malinga's sloppy rig get them through to the semis? Will Faf's alpha aura ignite an inspired South African resurgence in this tournament? Or will I come to my senses and head to bed at 1 a.m. on a Friday night when WinViz is predicting a 99% likelihood of a South African win? Of course not. Anyway, I guess my question is in reference to the previous podcast. Here goes. If you're unable to bench, what are your suggested alternatives to maintaining two bottles of wine a night and a tidy rig? And, to a lesser extent, with Dave chiming in on every 13th episode, even without having watched an over of cricket, how are you guys working out royalties / remuneration? Cheers, George.
It's good, George. It's good. It's good. To answer your question, re-bench and bottles of wine, it's obviously the answer is herbal teas and cocaine. I don't know how many times I need to say that. And if any cocaine dealers want to reach out. No. I don't drink two bottles of wine every night. That was just a phase I was going through at the beginning of the World Cup when I had to get through some of those tough games and just watch that fielding. And then I thought the best way to communicate that was to then drink heavily and then get into a social media platform where nothing good can happen and you can only possibly ruin your career, i.e. Twitter. Great question in terms of, like, how do you justify? I mean, this is a secret shame of many people during this World Cup that they don't want to admit watching games that mean nothing to them. You know, the derby of Sri Lanka and South Africa, as George rightly said, means nothing, but it meant everything at the time. Just goes to show that, you know, that was just a warm-up game for South Africa. My goodness me, Sri Lanka are terrible. I did not have the heart to tell her that the real reason of the heart, like she was being let down. I didn't have the heart. Well, if you've played enough cricket, George, you will have no heart at all. I mean, he knows the answer. He knows the answer to this. You need to leave your girlfriend for the World Cup. That's the only thing that I can possibly see as an outcome here. In terms of royalties, well, you know, Sam, Dave, and I have got into business together, and we thought, what's the way we can make the most money? And we thought, well, first of all, books. And then we thought, well, after that, we'll get into podcasting. So, things are going well.
You've not really addressed the question. Let's just leave it.
Okay. Well, as Pez said earlier, we are recording again tonight after the biggest game of the World Cup. So we'll be back in your ears tomorrow morning, Monday morning, Sunday evening, UK time. Monday morning, Australia
time. Big guest tonight.
Big guest, George Bailey's on the show. Can't wait. Dave will be with us as well to split the royalties three ways. Okay, see you then.